RSVPing to 11 events on campus, signing 9 petitions, and providing comments and constructive criticism on 4 products currently in beta. By 1016, her rank was 5,342, and again, the plateau, this time at 5,000, was hard to overcome. She wrote a series of zings about a new Circle service, allowing account holders to know whenever their name was mentioned in any messages sent from anyone else, and one of the zings, her 7th on the subject, caught fire and was re-zinged 2,904 times, and this brought her party rank up to 3,887. She felt a profound sense of accomplishment and possibility that was accompanied, in short order, by a near-complete sense of exhaustion. It was almost midnight, and she needed sleep. It was too late to go all the way home, so she checked the dorm availability, reserved one, got her access code, walked across campus, and into hometown. When she closed the door to her room, she felt like a fool for not taking advantage of the dorms sooner. The room was immaculate, awash in silver fixtures and blonde woods, the floors warm from radiant heat, the sheets and pillowcases so white and crisp they crackled when touched. The mattress, explained a card next to the bed, was organic, made not with springs or foam, but instead a new fiber that May found was both firmer and more pliant, superior to any bed she'd ever known. She pulled the blanket, cloud white and full of down, around her. But she couldn't sleep. Now, thinking about how much better she could do, she logged on again, this time on her tablet, and pledged to work till 2 in the morning. She was determined to break 3,000, and she did so, though it was 3:19 a.m. when it happened. Finally, not quite exhausted, but knowing she needed rest, she tucked herself in and turned off the lights. In the morning, May looked through the closets and dressers, knowing that the dorms were stocked with an array of clothes, all new, available to be borrowed or kept. She chose a cotton t-shirt and a pair of capri pants, both pristine. On the sink, there were new bottles of moisturizer and mouthwash, both organic and local, and she sampled each. She showered, dressed, and was back at her desk by 8:20. And immediately, the fruits of her labors were evident. There was a river of congratulatory messages on her third screen from Dan, Jared, Josiah, Denise, 5 or so messages from each of them, and at least a dozen from Annie, who seemed so proud and excited she might burst. Word spread through the inner circle, and May was sent 7,716 smiles by noon. Everyone had known she could do it. Everyone saw great things for her at the Circle. Everyone was certain she would graduate from CE in no time, as soon as September, because rarely had anyone risen so quickly through the party rank and with such laser-like focus. May's new feeling of competence and confidence carried her through the week, and given how close she was to the top 2,000, she stayed at her desk late through the weekend and early the next week, determined to crack through, sleeping in the same dorm room every night. She knew the upper 2,000, nicknamed T2K, was a group of circlers almost maniacal in their social activity and elite in their corresponding followers. The members of the T2K had been more or less locked in place, with few additions or movements within their ranks, for almost 18 months. But May knew she needed to try. By Thursday night, she'd gotten to 2,219, and knew she was among a group of similar strivers who were, like her, working feverishly to rise. She worked for an hour and saw herself climb only 2 spots to 2,217. This would be difficult, she knew, but the challenge was delicious. And every time she'd risen to a new 1,000, she received so many accolades and felt she was repaying Annie in particular that it drove her on. By 10 o'clock, just when she was tiring, and when she'd gotten as high as 2,188, she had the revelation that she was young, and she was strong, and if she worked through the night, one night without sleep, she could crack the T2K while everyone else was unconscious. She fortified herself with an energy drink and gummy worms, and when the caffeine and sugar kicked in, she felt invincible. The third screen's inner circle wasn't enough. She turned on her outer circle feed and was handling that without difficulty. She pushed forward, signing up for a few hundred more Zing feeds, starting with a comment on each. She was soon at 2012, and now she was really getting resistance. She posted 33 comments on a product test site and rose to 2009. She looked at her left wrist to see how her body was responding and thrilled at the sight of her pulse rate increasing. She was in command of all this and needed more. The total number of stats she was tracking was only 41. There was her aggregate customer service score, which was at 97. There was her last score, which was 99. There was the average of her pod, which was at 96. There was the number of queries handled that day thus far, 221. And the number of queries handled by that time yesterday, 219. And the number handled by her on average, 220. And by the pod's other members, 198. On her second screen, there were the number of messages sent by other staffers that day, 1,192, and the number of those messages that she'd read, 239, and the number to which she'd responded, 88. There was the number of recent invitations to Circle company events, 41, and the number she'd responded to, 28. There was the number of overall visitors to the Circle sites that day, 3.2 billion, and the number of page views, 88.7 billion. There was the number of friends in May's outer circle, 762, and outstanding requests by those wanting to be her friend, 27. There were the number of zingers she was following, 10,343, and the number following her, 18,198. There was the number of unread zings, 887. There was the number of zingers suggested to her, 12,862. There was a number of songs in her digital library, 6,877, number of artists represented, 921, and based on her tastes, the number of artists recommended to her, 3,408. There was the number of images in her library, 33,002, and number of images recommended to her, 100,038. There was the temperature inside the building, 70, and the temperature outside, 71. There was the number of staffers on campus that day, 10,981, and number of visitors to campus that day, 248. May had news alerts set for 45 names and subjects, and each time any one of them was mentioned by any of the news feeds she favored, she received a notice. That day, there were 187. She could see how many people had viewed her profile that day, 210, and how much time on average they spent, 1.3 minutes. If she wanted, of course, she could go deeper and see precisely what each person had viewed. Her health stats added a few dozen more numbers, each of them giving her a sense of great calm and control. She knew her heart rate and knew it was right. She knew her step count, almost 8,200 that day, and knew that she could get to 10,000 with ease. She knew she was properly hydrated and that her caloric intake that day was within accepted norms for someone of her body mass index. It occurred to her in a moment of sudden clarity that what had always caused her anxiety or stress or worry was not any one force, nothing independent and external. It wasn't danger to herself or the constant calamity of other people and their problems. It was internal. It was subjective. It was not knowing. It wasn't that she had an argument with a friend or was called on the carpet by Josiah and Denise. It was not knowing what it meant, not knowing their plans, not knowing the consequences. The future. If she knew these, there would be calm. She knew, with some degree of certainty, where her parents were, home, as always. She could see, with her circle search, where Annie was, in her office, probably still working, too. But where was Cowden? It had been 2 weeks since she'd seen or heard from him. She texted Annie. You awake? Always. Still haven't heard from Cowden. The old man. Maybe he died. He had a good long life. You really think he was just some interloper? I think you dodged a bullet. I'm glad he hasn't come back. I was worried about the espionage possibilities. He wasn't a spy. Then he was just old. Maybe some circler's grandfather came to visit and got lost. It's just as well. You were too young to be a widow. May thought of his hands. His hands had ruined her. All she wanted at that moment was his hands upon her again, his hand on her sacrum, pulling her close. Could her desires be so simple? And where in the hell had he gone? He had no right to disappear like this. She checked circle search again. She'd looked for him 100 times this way, with no success. But she had a right to know where he was, to at least know where he was, who he was. This was the unnecessary and antiquated burden of uncertainty. She could know instantly the temperature in Jakarta, but she couldn't find one man on a campus like this. Where is that man who touched you a certain way? If she could eliminate this kind of uncertainty, when and by whom would you be touched a certain way again? You would eliminate most of the stressors of the world, and maybe, too, the wave of despair that was gathering in May's chest. She'd been feeling this black rip, this loud tear, within her a few times a week. It didn't usually last long, but when she closed her eyes, she saw a tiny tear in what seemed to be black cloth, and through this tiny tear she heard the screams of millions of invisible souls. It was a very strange thing, she realized, and it wasn't anything she'd mentioned to anyone. She might have described it to Annie, but didn't want to worry her so soon into her time at the circle. But what was this feeling? Who was screaming through the tear in the cloth? She'd found the best way to get past it was to redouble her focus, to stay busy, to give more. She had a brief, silly thought that she might find Calden on Love-Love. She checked and felt stupid when her doubts were confirmed. The tear was opening up inside her, a blackness overtaking her. She closed her eyes and heard underwater screams. May cursed the not knowing and knew she needed someone who could be known, who could be located. The knock on the door was low and tentative.
"It's open," May said.
Francis pushed his face into the room and held the door.
"You sure?"
he said.
"I invited you,"
May said. He slipped in and closed the door, as if narrowly escaping from a pursuer in the hallway. He looked around the room.
"Like what you've done with the place?"
May laughed.
"Let's go to mine instead,"
he said. She thought of protesting, but wanted to see what his room looked like. All the dorm rooms varied in subtle ways, and now, because they'd become so popular and practical that many circlers were living in them more or less permanently, they could be customized by their occupants. When they arrived, she saw that his room was a mirror of her own, though with a few Francis touches, most notably a papier-mâché mask he'd made as a child. Yellow and with enormous bespectacled eyes, it looked out from over the bed. He saw her staring at it.
"What?"
he said.
"That's odd, don't you think? A mask over the bed?"
"I don't see it when I sleep," he said.
"You want something to drink?" He looked in the fridge, finding juices and a new kind of sake in a round glass container tinted pink.
"That looks good," she said. "I don't have that in my room. Mine's in a more standard bottle, maybe a different brand."
Francis mixed drinks for them both, overfilling each glass.
"I have a few shots every night," he said. "It's the only way to slow my head down so I can crash. You have that problem?"
"It takes me an hour to get to sleep," May said.
"Well,"
Francis said,
"this reduces that come down from an hour to 15 minutes.
He handed her the glass. May looked into it, thinking it very sad at first, the sake every night, then knew she would try it herself tomorrow. He was looking at something between her stomach and her elbow.
"What?"
"I can never get over your waist," he said.
"Excuse me?"
May said, thinking it was not worth it. It couldn't be worth it to be with this man who said things like this.
"No, no," he said. "I mean, it's so extraordinary, the line of it, how it bends in like some kind of bow."
And then his hands were tracing the contour of her waist, drawing a long C in the air.
"I love that you have hips and shoulders, and with that waist."
He smiled, staring straight into May, as if he had no idea of the strange directness of what he'd said, or didn't care.
"I guess, thank you," she said.
"That's really a compliment," he said. "It's like these curves were created for someone to put their hands there."
He mimed the resting of his own palms upon her waist. She stood, took a sip of her drink, and wondered if she should flee. But it was a compliment. He'd given her an inappropriate, clumsy, but very direct compliment that she knew she would never forget and that had already set her heart to a new and erratic pounding.
"You want to watch something?"
Francis asked. May shrugged, still struck dumb. Francis scrolled through the options. They had access to virtually every movie and television show extant and spent 5 minutes noting different things they could see, then thinking of something else that was like it, but better.
"Have you heard this new stuff by Hans Willis?"
Francis asked. May had decided to stay, and had decided that she felt good about herself around Francis, that she had power here, and she liked that power.
"No, who's he?"
"He's one of the musicians in residence. He recorded a whole concert last week."
"Is it out?"
"No, but if it gets good ratings from circlers, they might try to release it.
Let me see if I can find it."
He played it, a delicate piano piece, sounding like the beginning of rain. May got up to turn off the lights, allowing the gray luminescence of the monitor to remain, casting Francis in a ghostly light. She noticed a thick, leathery book and picked it up.
What's this? I don't have one of these in my room.
Oh, that's mine. It's an album, just pictures.
Like family pictures?
May asked, and then remembered his complicated history.
Sorry, I know that's probably not the best way to put it.
It's okay, he said. They're sort of family pictures. My siblings are in some of them, but they're mostly just me and the foster families. You want to look?
You keep it here at the circle?
He took it from May and sat on the bed.
No, it's usually at home, but I brought it in. You want to look at it? It's mostly depressing.
Francis had already opened the album. May sat next to him and watched as he turned the pages. She saw glimpses of Francis in modest living rooms, amber lit, and in kitchens, the occasional amusement park. Always the parents were blurry or cropped from the frames. He arrived at a photo of himself sitting on a skateboard, looking out through enormous glasses.
Those must have been the mother's, he said. Look at the frames.
He drew his finger over the round lenses.
That's a woman's style, right?
I think so, May said, staring at Francis's younger face.
He had the same open expression, the same prominent nose, the same full lower lip. She felt her eyes filling.
I can't remember those frames, he said. I don't know where they came from. All I can think is that my regular glasses had broken and these were hers and she was letting me wear them.
You look cute, May said.
But she wanted to cry and cry. Francis was squinting at the photo, as if hoping to glean some answers from it if he looked long enough.
Where was this?
May asked.
No idea, he said.
You don't know where you lived?
No clue. Even having pictures is pretty rare. Not all the foster families would give you photos, but when they did, they made sure not to show anything that could help you find them. No exteriors of houses, no addresses or street signs or landmarks.
You're serious?
Francis looked at her.
That's the foster care way.
Why?
So you couldn't come back, or what?
It was just a rule.
Yeah, so you couldn't come back. If they had you a year, that was the deal, and they didn't want you landing back on their doorstep again, especially when you got older. Some of the kids had some serious tendencies, so the families had to worry about when they got older and could track them down.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's a weird system, but it makes sense. He drank the rest of his sake and got up to adjust the stereo.
Can I look?
May asked. Francis shrugged. May paged through it, looking for any identifying imagery, but in dozens of photos, she saw no addresses, no homes. All the photos were interiors or anonymous backyards.
I bet some of them would want to hear from you, she said.
Francis was done with the stereo, and a new song was playing, an old soul song she couldn't name. He sat down next to her.
Maybe, but that's not the agreement.
So you haven't tried to contact them? I mean, with facial recognition?
I don't know. I haven't decided.
I mean, that's why I brought it here. I'm scanning the pictures tomorrow just to see. Maybe we get a few matches, but I'm not planning to do much beyond that. Just fill in a few gaps.
You have a right to know at least some basics.
May was leafing through the pages and landed on a picture of a young Francis, no more than 5, with 2 girls, 9 or 10, flanking him. May knew these were his sisters, the 2 who had been killed, and she wanted to look at them, though she didn't know why. She didn't want to coerce Francis into talking about them, and knew she shouldn't say anything, that she should allow him to initiate any discussion of them, and if he didn't, soon, she should turn the page. He said nothing, so she turned the page, feeling a surge of feeling for him. She'd been too tough on him before. He was here, he liked her, he wanted her with him, and he was the saddest person she'd ever known. She could change that.
Your pulse is going nuts, he said.
May looked down at her bracelet and saw that her heart rate was at 134.
Let me see yours, she said.
He rolled up his sleeve. She grabbed his wrist and turned it.
His was at 128.
You're not so calm yourself,
she said, and left her hand resting across his lap.
Leave your hand there and watch it get faster,
he said, and together they did. It was astonishing. It quickly rose to 134.